You are listening to From Sobriety to Recovery with Jesse Mogul. Let's get to the show. Welcome to From Sobriety to Recovery. I am your host, Jesse Mogul. I am in addiction recovery, and I am currently on my treadmill in my stand-up desk, getting my walking on while I'm talking to you all, and I've yet to try this before, so I am hoping that you don't hear my footsteps below, but I am in the process of doing the podcast in between many different tasks and the opportunity to get on the microphone and discuss with you all the CRSS conference and my presentation yesterday is beginning to wane, and I don't want this to come out on Friday because I'm going to my dad's lake house where he and his wife have retired for my dad's 68th birthday. He turned 68 the same year I turned 48, and his birthday happens to be falling on a once-in-a-lifetime event. The area of totality for the eclipse that will happen on Monday is literally going over his lake house, and so we are going to get on the boat, and we are going to go out to the lake, and we are going to watch an eclipse on a boat on a lake. This is literally the definition of a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And I am thoroughly excited for it, even though it does forecast for clouds that day. I don't really know how much that will change what I'll be able to see. I don't even know what kind of cloud cover to be expecting. I'm just going into it with just the blessings that Dad has created a life for himself that I get to enjoy. That includes a house near a gigantic, awesome lake and a pontoon boat, and that he is healthy and thriving at his age. And so much has happened over the last few weeks and will be continuing to happen for me over the next few weeks until really, I think, the weekend of April 20th. And it's not lost on me that I will be leaving Asheville having seen and experienced my roommate from college's 50th birthday on what amounts to 420. And 420 used to be a big day for me back in my college years. And if any of y'all are familiar with that, it's sort of like 420 is the time to get high. 420 is the day that everyone's supposed to get bonkers. And I have some pretty stupid stories of me behaving rather insanely back in those days. So the fact that I will be culminating his 50th birthday on that date is pretty wild because I'll be completely sober and enjoying people who will not be completely sober. But I have worked my program and really honed in my skills of being around people who are getting inebriated and not feeling drawn into that world. So that's what I've got going on so far. And I want to really cover what I experienced last week at the Certified Recovery Support Specialist Conference down in Birmingham, Alabama. For those of you who have been following linearly, then you know that a couple years ago, I became a Certified Recovery Support Specialist here. And that gives me an amazing opportunity to really help people in this community even more so than the podcast and the recovery coaching, because now I've got credentials that allow me to go into addiction recovery centers and facilities of that nature and be able to work directly with clients. That's what led me to His Way when I did that internship, or Wellstone Emergency Services when I did that internship, both of those here in Huntsville. And it's just been a remarkable organization to be a member of. So when you get, you know, 400 or 500 of us in a huge building, the energy that comes from so many people gathering together that have not only achieved 2+ years of sobriety and recovery in their own life, but now spend their lives dedicated to helping other people achieve similar goals and ambitions in their life. And there's some really cool things that come out of going to these levels of experiences and really just immersing myself in those. And so some of those that I'm going to ramble through today, and I don't really have any notes for this. This is really one of those shows where I just want to discuss my experiences of what's happening. But I did put down judgments, next smallest step, and PIMS. So I will be covering those in as much as I cover anything when I make notes. So when I went there, I fully expected what I enjoyed last year, which is just a bunch of people gathered together who really want to celebrate recovery and what we do for others. I'm watching the joy some people had from receiving an award for being exceptional in their office and really stepping into their highest sense of self, and just the raw emotions that come from people who care so much. And when it came time for my presentation after lunch on Thursday, it was very interesting because I had spent a lot of time putting together the slide deck, even though I had no intentions of really using it. I had given various parts of this speech to other places, but never having tried to culminate it all into one coherent hour and 15-minute long presentation. And while I will do my own after action report and say that I probably use a little too much profanity, one person in the audience even commented to sort of tame it down. There was a part of me, at least those first 30 minutes or so of the presentation, where it's like, I was blacked out in a good way. Like I just went all inspirational Jesse on the room. And as much as I wanted to follow my structure of the importance of habits and finding the hidden message and lesson behind the automatic negative self-talk, and then I was going to do a whole part on finding the time for our sobriety, and I never even got to that section. But what ended up happening was just me. I feel like when I'm in rooms like that, that so many of us who've achieved sobriety and recovery, after a certain point, like that becomes our new way of life. And yet there's still so many things that we want to achieve that perhaps our old way of thinking, limiting beliefs, automatic negative thoughts tell us that we're not worthy of, that we can't achieve, that we might fail. And when we go back to the episode I did recently about not being the first person to reject yourself, not being the reason why you don't succeed, it was somewhere in the 270s. It was recent. I think it was being present in the moment was part of the title. It really it pains me when people sitting in front of me who've achieved so much in their sobriety recovery, who've helped so many other people, who want to be a speaker, or they want to be an author, or they want to launch their own podcast, or they want to become a recovery coach. When they want to do things that I've put a tremendous amount of effort into creating in my life, and they will say things that I swear it's like they're in my brain repeating back to me how they feel, like they heard me say those things to myself 5, 6, 7 years ago. Because when this whole thing first started, I didn't think for a moment that I was necessarily worthy of any attention toward what I was doing with my life. And while I'd already launched podcasts before and certainly had ambitions of being an author back before addiction took my life, it wasn't really like I had thought out ahead of time what I was going to do with my sobriety and recovery. And blessed be that Matt Browning came across me and I learned NLP and I was able to start releasing those limiting beliefs, negating those automatic negative thoughts, finding the positive message in those, creating new habits. And one of the habits that I really hunkered down into was just taking action as fast as possible. I sold a couple copies of my College Success Habits book there and I told them, like, look, just read this and then just insert in addiction and recovery words where I might be talking to the college students about something else, because those 7 powerful principles are really what I led this entire journey with, right? We're talking about cultivating a growth mindset, being decisive. It's develop a growth mindset, be decisive, cultivate courage, take action, embrace discipline, exercise flexibility, and tenaciousness, embody tenaciousness and tenacity, and just refuse to tell myself no. And when people judge themselves before they've even had a chance to step into themselves, they're locking away such incredible potential. Like I looked in that mirror the day I dragged myself out of that shit tub and was just like, is this seriously how my story ends? My stepdad died in a bathroom. I don't want to also die in a bathroom. And when people are looking at me with that hunger, that thirst to be more, that's when I start to channel like this divine, you know, universal, godlike, just like desire to not allow people to tell themselves that they can't succeed at something. I spend an inordinate amount of my time seeking to create more choices in my life. I don't want to be the one who starts to negate some of those choices just out of a fear of rejection or that it won't be accepted or I might say the wrong thing. I am far from perfect, and I am certainly prone to an overuse of profanity. I am certainly prone to getting off topic and going off on wild tangents and sidebars. And I do this in my speeches, and even though I train people how to speak on stage, and I teach people how to write books, and I've taught people how to launch their own podcasts and be coaches. Even some of the things that I teach, I don't always necessarily follow through on, because in the moment, your body just wants to move. The voice just wants to go off on its sidebar tangent. And I can judge myself about those things. I could say, well, the speech wasn't as well prepared because I started jumping all over the place. But in the moment, I channeled whatever energy was in me, and I said what I said. And for a lot of those people, it's exactly what they needed to hear. And for those that were disappointed that it didn't go down a certain path, I cannot please everyone. You cannot please everyone. When we try to please everyone, we end up pleasing no one. So we have to find what pleases us and then get it out there. And just allow the universe to do with it as it will. There is too many social media channels. There's too many ways for people to speak their mind. You could go out there and tell everybody to love sunshine and to dance in fields and let butterflies land on your face and be so happy that the universe loves you. And somebody would say, you just stomped all over grass and you killed it. And there's not enough sunshine for everybody because you were dancing in the field. And I bet you that butterfly died later on because the oils on your face poisoned it. You can't win. So stop worrying about pleasing everybody else and do your best to be prepared and then just go out there and just do the damn thing. Similar to the CRSS conference presentation, I gave a workshop lunch and learn yesterday, basically training people how to train. And I've done this so many times, and most of the time, I can stay on point, and I can obviously get a little inspirational. And again, did I move my body around too much? Did I wave my hands around too much? Did I teeter back and forth on my left and right foot? Sure. I'm sure I did. I'm sure that there were mannerisms, if I see it on video here soon, that I would not be thrilled with. Did I cover every single section of the presentation as well as I could? What is as well as I could? It was in the moment that I got the information across. And if 70% of the people compliment it and say, thank you, that was so helpful, I can't wait to integrate this into what I'm doing, then that's a victory, because that's 70% of the people who weren't doing it before. And if a few people say, well, you know, you talked too fast, it didn't seem well organized, I don't really understand why I just learned all of that, then yes, while it's a bummer that those people might have that perspective, it is their subjective perspective. Can I work on connecting with those people more in the future? Certainly I will. But could I also allow those comments that are just feedback? It's just opportunities to develop myself more as a speaker, to develop myself more as a trainer. It's not an insult on my abilities as much as it's a challenge to continue to push myself to excel and to achieve even more. That each time I pick up the heavy weight, it gets a little bit lighter. So now tomorrow I'm picking up a little bit heavier of a weight. When somebody gives you feedback, you can choose to take it as an insult. You can choose to judge yourself and say, that's it. I didn't please everybody in the room, so that's it. I'm just never going to do it again. But there's people in that room who need to hear what you say. There's people in those rooms who I'm the one who's finally going to get through to them. when they're going to do something and they're like, oh my goodness, I didn't even think that I was capable of this. And now look at what I'm doing. This is astounding. And they might think of me in that moment, or they might not. But I don't necessarily care if they think about me as much as that brings me joy that they are now doing it. I said in the speech multiple times yesterday that it matters to me that I don't give a man a fish, that I teach him to fish. But it matters even more that I teach them how to teach other people to fish. Because that's when you start to reverberate your message across the universe. When somebody can learn something from you and they are able to integrate it to such an extent that they can then go off and talk to other people about it and feel very well informed, and they have the experiences of taking action, and they understand what that day-to-day discipline really feels like, that's the consistency we're looking for here. Having those one-off days where we crush it and then we don't step back into that amazing sense of self for another month is literally binding ourselves with our own ties and saying, no, I'm only capable of this once in a while. But we're capable of it every single day. And that self-judgment and that tearing of each other down and saying, you're not good enough. Why are you doing this? What gives you the right to be standing on this stage? I should be standing on this stage. It's not the supportive energy that's going to allow our entire species to rise above just the brain's bullshit. We're all dealing with our own habits and our own self-judgments and our own automatic negative thoughts. Like the chaos whirlwind that goes on inside of our minds. And I'm not necessarily sure if this can speak for every human on this planet, but I'd be willing to bet there is a tremendous amount of us that spend an inordinate amount of time talking some nonsense to ourselves. And therefore, all the good, all the appreciation, all the gratitude and the thankfulness that we would rather be embracing is getting muted. It's getting pushed to the back of the bus in favor for this monster moron sitting next to us to denigrate ourselves and tear ourselves down. What the frickin' fuck? Stop doing it, Jesse. What is your problem, man? Like, come the frick on. I'm so mindful of my profanity right now because of that presentation. But it's like I wake up and it's immediately like I want to tear myself down. Well, I didn't say it this way. I didn't do it that way. What if I didn't connect with that person? What if that person's upset because I used the F word too much? What if that person's upset because I said God in the presentation? Like, what if this and what if that and what if this? And I'm like, I am what ifing the hell out of myself. And all it's doing is just tearing me down. Punch by punch, chisel hammer by chisel hammer. And it's not helping. I will admit that a few months ago when I looked at this stretch of my life coming up, basically mid-March to April 20th-ish, right? I was like, okay, there's a whole lot going on. This is going to be a very challenging 30 to 40 days. Right, let's be as prepared as possible. Let's set up our habits for success. Let's focus on the next smallest step. Let's take care of what's in front of us right now. And had I not been so busy, maybe I would have been able to practice the CRSS presentation more and felt like it was more aligned and organized. Same goes with the workshop that I did yesterday. Right, I've taught this Insight Arc system so many times, which is also called format, why, what, how, what, if. I've taught it so many times that I just felt like I could just fall back on just muscle memory and mental memory with that. But there are some areas where I could certainly improve myself. But I was focused on the next smallest step. I took on all of these obligations knowing full well that there was going to be times throughout these 40 days where some things might fall through the cracks. And I would have to do my best to hope, one, that they would bounce up off the ground and not shatter, and two, just get them taken care of, reach out to the people who need to be spoken with, and just thank them for their patience, send the message that I promised I'd send, and then let's figure out what to do with the next smallest step. See, in life, I refuse to let my own fears of this, that, or the other tell me no. Like, I'm sure that any wise person would have looked at this schedule and been like, dude, you need to cut three or four things out of this. But I follow this mentality like, will I remember being this tired in 3 days? Will I remember not doing this as well as I could have in 4 days? Well, I hope for some levity and some compassion and empathy from others who see that, yeah, I took on a lot. It's not necessarily working out as well as I'd prefer, but it's working out as well as I am able to manage it. In life, if you just say, well, I've already got this on my plate or I've already got that on my plate, then you're shutting down opportunities. And I am a huge believer in opportunity cost and opportunity value. That yes, I could take on 6 things and maybe they don't all get my undivided attention, but it gives me an opportunity to participate in all of them, figure out where things went well, see where I can give myself some feedback, and then figure out how to do it even more desirably the next time. If I say no to the new Orion Amphitheater job and I don't try to go to orientation today from 2 to 5, then maybe they don't need me anymore in 2 weeks when I finally have time. So I'm going to cram this orientation that came out of left field like the Squirrel Master 5 days ago and just make it happen. Do I have to leave straight from the orientation to drive 2 hours to Nashville for a Black Crowes concert? Well, I don't have to. But I purchased this ticket 3 months ago, and I've been looking forward to this concert ever since then, so I'm going to make it happen. Even if that means not getting home till 1, getting back up at 7, packing up my car and driving 11 hours to my dad's lake house, by goodness gracious, I made a commitment to do these things, and I'm going to do them. I hope that my family understands that I'm stretched thin and realizes that in not too much time, I will have a wide open window where we can start to really work on things here at the house and spend more time together. But I made commitments. I have definitely learned to reel it in a little bit. But at the same time, when somebody contacts me and says, we want you to do a workshop and we really can't wait for you to come in, am I going to say no to that financial opportunity? Say no to that chance to spread my message and help other people become better trainers? I don't want to say no, so I'll say yes, and I'll figure out a way to make it happen. When the CRSS conference comes up and I've got a ton of things I could be doing in my office, but instead I'm spending 3 days in Birmingham, it's an opportunity to connect with other people who are working in my industry, who care about others so much so that they've dedicated their career ambitions to being of service to those who need us the most. I don't want to miss that opportunity. I don't just want to show up on Thursday, give my presentation, and leave. I want to be a part of that. I want to immerse myself in that. And if I get blacked out on stage and just channel inspirational Jesse and I'm all over the place and just saying whatever comes to mind, then that's what people needed to hear in the moment. I do this experiment, this thing called human design, and I'm really just being introduced to it because of Aubrey, who I co-teach in LP with. And she says that one of my energy channels is in the throat, that I can just get on a microphone or I can just get on a stage or I can just get in front of people. And if I just trust in my lived experiences that what needs to be said will be said in that moment. And she told me that about 2 years ago when we were doing Master Prac in California. I think it may have been last year. And I remember hearing that, and I heard it as permission to not necessarily not prepare, but to not over-prepare, to trust that everything that I've learned and everything that I've done and all my lived experiences will coalesce in the moment to encourage and to inspire and to instigate within somebody to motivate themselves, to push themselves to achieve more than they ever thought they could. And if part of the internal self-talk is my voice saying, yes, you can, yes, you can, yes, you can, then blessed be. But if that voice that would have been mine becomes somebody else's, as long as they're saying, yes, you can, yes, you can, yes, you can. Bandwidth and time and attention and flexibility, I mean, these are all, to varying degrees, part of the variables that can fluctuate from day to day, from time to time, to moment to moment. What you choose to do with your time, how hard you choose to push yourself, the things you say yes or no to, they're all going to come with an opportunity cost and an opportunity for value. It's up to you to decide if you want to hem yourself in and tell yourself no, or if you want to push yourself harder than you've ever pushed yourself before. And I know that from experience of being told this by people, that we are in addiction recovery. We can be extreme. We can lack impulse control. We can seek instant gratification. So there can be this worry that if I push myself too hard, I might find myself hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, and I might be susceptible to relapsing or lapsing or going back to my old ways. That is an unknown. That is not something that I would tell you is unlikely any more than I would tell you that it is likely. But if there's a desire in yourself to achieve something, and the thing holding you back is that maybe it won't work out, maybe I'll get rejected, maybe one day I'll be really tired and I might relapse, then I would instill this belief system in you, that when you're creating a life you don't want to escape from, you won't want to escape from it. If you're out there pushing yourself and taking on new challenges and embracing the wild unknown and the uncomfort zone and all of this stuff, like, there's going to be a part of you that looks at yourself in the mirror and says, yeah, if this was a drinking day, I'd be blacked out, but screw that. This is not a drinking day. This is a doing day. This is a let's crush it day. This is a let's put every single step forward with confidence and vibrance and tenacity. And tomorrow we'll wake up and we'll figure out what we're going to do that day. Well, in my case, I would already have that planned out. But you get my point here, is that we're looking for the next smallest step. What's right in front of us? What is the opportunity that is there? If I say yes to this, what opportunities am I saying no to? And definitely, let's start to eliminate the judgments of ourselves first and foremost. It's there. It's the automatic negative thoughts. It's been programmed into our brains because we were so worried about saber-toothed cats and gigantic snakes killing us for thousands of years, roving gangs of marauders with swords, you know, coming in with their gigantic stallions and going Conan the Barbarian on our village. Remember, Conan the Barbarian's village was destroyed. He never went out and hurt anybody who didn't deserve to be hurt. He went after that snake guy who was played by Earl something. He was the voice of Darth Vader. But anyways, that's who played it, right? Somebody came into Conan O'Brien. Two very different Conans. But somebody came into Conan the Barbarian's village, right? Killed his family right in front of him. And so he spent the rest of his life seeking to destroy this guy, right? Those roving gangs of marauders, that used to be a thing. Well, we don't have roving gangs of marauders in most countries on this planet. Yes, I do understand. There's probably about 20 countries that still have roving gangs of marauders. And if you live in one of those places, bless you for not only putting up with that every day, but also seeking sobriety and recovery. Because, man, that must be a freaking challenge. But in most of the world, we live in a land where we are pretty confident when we leave our house in the morning that we're going to come home to it at night and everything's going to be A-okay. So that constant fear in our back of our minds that wants us to worry and have anxiety and stress about things, it's just misplaced because it's not worried about roving gangs of marauders, saber-toothed cats, and gigantic snakes. So now it's like, well, I got to worry about something. I should worry about whether this person's judging me as I stand in front of them. I'm crossing my arms. Does that make them think I'm closed off? Now my arms are down by my side. Am I slouching am I hunching over my shoulder? Should I stand up straight? Am I looking them in the eye? Am I asking them enough questions? Are they asking me enough questions? What do they think about my shoes? Are my shoes good? Are my shoes dirty? Is my belt too tight? Did I lose too much weight? Am I too fat? Am I too skinny? Is my hair messed up? Right? It's like the brain is like, I will find something to concern myself with no matter what. Even when we succeed, we question ourselves. This is just part of the human experience. And when we step into this new version of ourselves, seeking for more physical health and well-being, for more emotional intelligence and stability, for a higher sense of mental acuity and learning new things and applying new things, and to step into our spirituality in such a way that we can really harness our morals, our ethics, our values, our opinions, our beliefs, our standards of habits, our principles, when we really just organize our life in such a way that each day we do something that's physically active. I'm walking on a treadmill while doing a podcast because the rest of my day, I don't know where I'll get these steps. When it comes to emotional intelligence, yes, I get triggered just like the rest of y'all. I'm having a conversation with a girlfriend and she starts to raise her voice and it's all of a sudden like that anchor gets triggered and now I'm just like, uh-oh, time to defend myself. But maybe it's not the time to defend myself. And maybe instead it's the time to embrace what she has to say, realizing that she has her subjective perspective. She has her model of the world and I have mine. And neither of them are good or bad or right or wrong. It is just our lived experiences that created this. And if somebody wants to judge you for what you've done in your past or judge you for what you're trying to achieve now, it's your choice whether to just let that float down the river and over the waterfall or whether you let it anchor on your shore and just swirl around in your mind for hours. When it comes to our mental acuity, we're always taking in information. We have literally created more information since 2015 than the human species had created before then. Every 2 years, the amount of information on this planet is doubling. The average attention span is 8 to 12 seconds. On a screen, it's 45 to 75 seconds. And most people can only stay focused for about 15 or 20 minutes before their brain trails off. And I would debate that it's even less than that. You probably let your brain daydream and trail off 13 times already. Because I've said something that triggered a thought, that created a feeling, and then you just started to play out some scenario in your head. It's okay that this stuff is happening. Let's just figure out ways to reel it in so that we're not constantly going down a spiral that may not be benefiting us in the moment. I do agree that sometimes these daydreams I have are all about the disempowerment dynamic. I'm the hero or I'm the victim or I'm the villain. It's like I'm playing out superhero movies in my head all the time. And I can spend a lot of time in my head. I like to daydream and I like to talk about things with myself. I like to invite multiple versions of me to have conversations, not in like a psychotic way where I have multiple personalities, but just in a way where I feel like all versions of me are invited to the table. Let's share some coffee and let's talk about the whimsicalness that is Jesse. But it's fine that we spend time in our heads as long as we're also spending a majority of our time in the real world, in this reality that we're creating for ourselves. If the spiraling of the negative self-talk starts to tell us that we can't do something physically or emotionally or mentally or spiritually, then we've got a problem. Then we need to sit that version down and say, look, Jesse, like I get it. You're trying to protect me from this, that, or the other. But in the process of trying to protect me, you're holding me back. And I would rather go out there and swim in the wide, wide, very deep ocean. And maybe a shark shows up or a stingray, but maybe it's a dolphin. Maybe it's a manatee. Maybe it's something beautiful that I don't even know exists. But I don't want to stand on the shore and wonder how warm the water is. I'd rather just get in it, experience it, and then figure out from there whether that was a good decision or not. In California, getting in the water is a horrible decision. On the East Coast, down by Florida, especially in the Gulf, it's a wonderful decision because the temperature variations in the water is like 30 degrees. But the point is that even in the Pacific, I got in there because I was not going to not experience that. There's a lot of things from California I look back on that I didn't do because I thought I'd be there forever. And now I'm not there anymore. And there's a part of me that regrets not stepping outside of myself, not going to that museum or going to that amusement park or going and doing that one thing. I never visited the Redwoods. I never visited Hearst Castle. I only went down to San Diego like 10 or 15 times, but I went to Vegas like 30 times. It's like there was a lot of things that I didn't let myself experience because I didn't want to spend the money or I didn't want to be around that many people or I didn't want to have to deal with the traffic and all that other crap. But in the end, would I remember the traffic if I had gone to Hearst Castle or I remember Hearst Castle? Would I remember how hot or cold it was around the Redwoods or would I remember being around trees that have existed for hundreds of years? Be the version of yourself that says, you know what? I don't care how difficult it is to get to this place. I want to experience the journey. And any time that I think I've failed, just see it as the opportunity for feedback that it is. Learn from it, grow from it, experience it, and then move on. If I can't affect it or direct it, I accept it. I evaluate, and then I learn from it, and then I take action again. I swear there's some acronyms from other episodes that my brain wants to remember right now, but it's not coming. But I will wrap it up and I will literally get you out of here on this. That self-judgments and automatic negative thoughts, that's sort of inherent in the human experience. So ask yourself, what's the next smallest step? What can I do right now to move myself forward? Is this good for me? Is this good for my loved ones? Is this good for my world at large? When I surround myself with people who strive to be the best versions of themselves and help other people become the best versions of themselves, I can also see the pain and the sorrow in their eyes that says, yes, I've achieved all of this, but am I even worthy of it? And who am I to think that I can push myself even further and harder and achieve even more when I don't even think I deserve what I've already achieved? And that is some bunkery. I will not accept that from you. You have achieved what you've achieved. And if you want to judge it that it's not enough, or you want to judge it that it's too much, that again is subjective to your perspective. But in the future, when you're a little older and you have less freedom of movement, and maybe you're incapacitated and death is nigh, do you want to be sitting there looking back over at your life wondering what would have been if you'd have just taken that step? Or do you just want to jump into it feet first and figure it out along the way? Now, I'm not encouraging us to all jump out of airplanes without parachutes. I mean, that's stupid. We can't fly. But we can certainly be as prepared as possible and know when to pull the little parachute stringy thing. Remember, I did shatter my leg skydiving, which is what led me to sobriety. But I would get back up in that airplane. I would jump again because we can prepare. We can think through the steps. We can have contingencies in place. But I refuse to just stand there in the airplane looking out and not jumping. I refuse to stand on the shoreline and not get in that water. I refuse for an opportunity to come in front of me and for me not to at least deliberate on whether that would be beneficial for my life or not. Some things I say no to. Some things I say yes to. Some things I say F no to. And other things I say hell yeah to. But there's a deliberation. There's a thoughtfulness. There is a version of me that's still inside, yearning to be free. And it's time for me to continue to take steps to achieve that version of myself. Knowing full well, when that version of me finally gets out, there's going to be another version of me who wants even more, who wants to achieve this, that, or the other, who is now inside me yearning to be free. It is literally a loop that never ends. And I'm good with that. Because I spent years telling myself I was a worthless piece of shit. It's about time I start believing that I'm actually worthy of everything I've achieved. It's about time you start realizing that you're worthy of more too. And then every single day, pushing yourself to achieve that. You're the one holding yourself back first and foremost. Everybody else, they don't do it to be mean or nefarious. At least we hope most people don't do it for that. But everything other people do is to serve their needs first. It's not selfish. It's just the way that the brain operates. So realize in those moments when they might say, no, you can't do that, or don't do that, you might get hurt, or you might this, that, or the other. Just realize that there's a love they have for you that's just a little misplaced in the moment. Do you. Step into you. There is a version of you yearning to be free. Set them free by taking the next smallest step each and every day. Whether it's physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual, take the steps. Release the judgments. Find validation about your life from yourself first. Because that's who you're rebuilding trust and love with, is yourself. Everybody else will get to experience the amazingness from that through you as you do it. Be the person you've always wanted to be. Trust me, I'm saying that to me. All right, my friends, inclusivity over exclusivity, the power of positive energy release and flow. Every day is the best day of our lives when we wake up sober. Shout out to Sunshine. Shout out to Robert. See you next time. Glow on. Much love, everybody. Bye-bye.